88.7 Socorro. Online at KUNM.org.
Welcome to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Stephen Spitz. Today we ask, what can be done to bolster Albuquerque's economy? Albuquerque's problem, like the rest of New Mexico, is that since the Great Recession, more jobs have been lost due to federal and state budget cuts than have been created. But now there is good news. Albuquerque has been selected by a consortium of national foundations and institutions for a Living Cities Award, one of five top U.S. cities. Albuquerque is therefore in line to receive millions of dollars in financial aid and technical advice. The bare bones of Albuquerque's proposal are to increase jobs and economic mobility through a high-tech innovation hub at Central and Broadway, together with a rapid transit bus service along Central to revitalize Albuquerque's downtown. Joining me to discuss this are Albuquerque's Mayor Richard Berry, the new head of Albuquerque's Living Cities team, Robin Brule, and the director of Albuquerque's Economic Development Department, Gary Opedal. Welcome to you all. Mr. Mayor, if I could start with you. First of all, congratulations. You're in good company with San Francisco, San Antonio, New Orleans, and Seattle. What's your take on the significance of this selection?
You know, we're very pleased, Steve, that we were selected by Living Cities to be part of their integration initiative phase two. The first cities that were involved in this a number of years ago were Detroit, Newark, the Twin Cities. We're involved in this. And so this is the second round for Living Cities, and it's a good time to be part of this because we're going to be able to not only take the tremendous resources and availability of expertise from Living Cities and that consortium of, as you said, 22 of the largest funding organizations and philanthropic organizations in the world, but we're also going to be able to take their experiences from Integration Initiative Phase 1 and put those to work. For example, the planning year process that we can talk about. But it's great company to be in, and this is a competition, and there was lots and lots of cities that tried to get entree into this program. And the fact that Albuquerque was selected, I think, speaks volumes about our community, but also about the approach that we're trying to take with the initiative.
So I've outlined what I call the bare bones of the approach, which is the innovation hub at Central and Broadway, and the mass rapid transit, the bus mass rapid transit. But there's much more to the proposal, I take it, than that.
We want to diversify our local economy. It's as simple as that. And we think it's important to do that for Albuquerque and for New Mexico to prosper in the decades and generations ahead. Part of our proposal to Living Cities is to help with low-income individuals and families to be more economically mobile. And you can do that in lots of ways, but we're taking in the entrepreneurial bent on this, if you will. And we're bringing in groups and building a philosophy around if we can teach and work with folks and pursue an entrepreneurial ecosystem here, that's going to bode well for everybody from job creation, which really starts with business creation. And we think we have, and I know as a small business person here for decades, that we have the ability set and skill sets here to do that in the gumption, if you will. But it would be good to try to bring in some expertise to help bolster that.
No, it seems to me that one of the attractions of Albuquerque's proposal is you were not only talking the talk, but you were walking the walk because you already had this combination of entities that was working to create this innovation.
And that's an important aspect. I think Living Cities is not necessarily interested in cities coming forward with their hand out, with their hat in hand, saying, just give us resources. They want leadership in place. They want leadership that can work together. In place, and they want ideas that are already on the table and in some form or fashion moving forward. And that's rarer than it may appear sometimes to have groups in leadership and individuals that would just want to get work done. I think that was a big part of the equation for Living Cities.
I take it you borrowed money from Federal Educators Credit. You say they gave it.
It's a grant.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because I was going to say you also borrowed some of their executives.
That's where Robin Brule comes in.
And you're the new head of this whole team, right, Robin?
Correct. I had already been working with the mayor on some of his cross-sector, cross-system strategies for the city to bolster education, workforce, economic development, and health issues.
You were already doing this while you were at the credit union.
Correct, because the most important thing is really figuring out how do we use our resources more effectively to make change.
Now we being the city, you're taking.
We being the city collectively, whether
business interests, foundation's interest, the city's interest,
all coming together to work together to solve challenges. And when Living Cities announced that they were going to do a second round for the integration initiative, we really felt like we had synergy around this, we had movement around this, and we had all the component pieces that they were looking for, and we were fortunate enough to be awarded.
So the first year, as the mayor already mentioned, is the so-called planning year. And what can listeners understand from what you're going to be doing over the next year?
Well, the planning year really allows us to take an asset-based approach to lift up what strengths and resources we already have that go to this entrepreneurial ecosystem that we're talking about creating and enhancing.
Really, beyond the mass transit and beyond the innovation hub, is that your...
All of those things into consideration. I mean, you mentioned the high-tech resources that we have,
right,
and commercialization of research. That is absolutely one major part of this that we're going to be focusing on. But we're also focusing on, as the mayor calls, the kitchen table entrepreneur, the guy who's creating his own business, who's figuring out, you know, what he wants to do to support the local economy, and the Main Street entrepreneur. Those are just as important to this equation.
That's really important. I mean, you know, if you're a baker and you want to start a bakery, or if you're a painter and you want to start a painting company, or a landscaper and want to start a landscaping company, why should that be any less important than somebody who's invented the next vaccine or the next high tech? We want to include that, certainly, and we have a lot of assets here and a lot of research that happens here that just other cities just simply don't have, and we need to take more advantage of that, and we know that we need to commercialize more of that research. But let's not leave behind individuals who want to be mom and pop businesses, because that's a backbone of any thriving economy.
True, but I mean, how do you do that other than by, you know, conventional lending?
Well, certainly
mentoring.
Certainly capital is important, and part of the Living Cities initiative, if you look at other cities, they can bring low-cost loans to the table. They can bring forgivable loans to the table, for example. But not everybody, and this is my experience, I mean, I grew up around, you know, an agrarian economy in the Midwest. You see farmers and ranchers and small business people, and you learn entrepreneurship by seeing it every day. Not everybody has that benefit of a parent or an uncle or an aunt or somebody putting their arm around them and saying, listen, here's how it works. Here's how you go from being an employee to an employer. And so part of the Living Cities initiative, and part of what's going to happen at Innovate ABQ, which is the UNM site at First Baptist, the old First Baptist Church site, is to bring even kids from grade school to mid school to high school into the equation, just like we're bringing in some PhD from the national laboratories to teach them how to take ideas to concepts. How do you put together balance sheets? How do you go through this process of getting loans? How do you, this whole process, and it's not intuitive necessarily. You have to learn it.
Well, let me just mention, if you've just tuned in, this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and today we're really happy to have in the studio Mayor Richard Barry, the mayor of Albuquerque. We're also pleased to have Robin Brule in the studio and Gary Opadal in the studio. And we're talking about a Living Cities initiative where Albuquerque has been selected as one of the five top cities in the United States to develop its economy. And let me just bring you into the discussion, Gary Opadal. And first of all, Gary, it seems to me that your background is a little bit different than most city employees, because you really come from the private sector.
Come from the private sector and have helped grow companies and start companies in Albuquerque. And so, a continuous entrepreneur is what I would more categorize it. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about here is that you can be entrepreneurial in any space that you're in. And we really want to democratize entrepreneurism. We know that it can be taught. It seems a little bit tough, like buying your first house with escrow and title and all that. But once you learn it, then it's easy to do, and it's something that can be taught. And as the mayor said, it's not intuitive, but I work out at a gym that's run by a young man who came up to me after a talk and said, hey, I'd like to start a gym. You know, can I buy you a cup of coffee? And he's had a successful gym for 4 years, because capital will follow good ideas. We know we have the assets. We just need to coordinate them.
Well, you know, skeptics would say, you know, we've kind of heard this all before in terms of the high-tech transfer. And part of the critique I've heard from entrepreneurs is there just isn't an entrepreneurial culture here. There's a lot of small businesses that deal with the labs. They're not into taking risks.
You know, risk-taking is part of entrepreneurism and is something that we do need to work on as a community. We can build that too, and people just need to see some success. You know, like Mayor says, about fail forward. You know, in places where entrepreneurs thrive, you know, that fail forward or seeing failure as a sign of progress, failure as an iterative process towards success is exactly what we need to cultivate here, and we can do it.
And entrepreneurial cities around the world, San Francisco, other places, have really embraced that. And we've actually started to do that a little here in Albuquerque. Take Eclipse Aviation.
Yeah.
A company that was started and it had a great product. The business model didn't work for them in the market conditions at the time. So a lot of the news was about, oh, look at this company that failed. Well, Mason Holland and Ed Lundeen came in. They bought the company. They changed the name, obviously. It's still Eclipse, but it's Eclipse Aerospace. Changed the business model. Still have a great product. And now we just announced several weeks ago they're hiring 100 or more additional people to come in and build jets. If we look at it as a failure because they didn't make it on the first go-round, well, that's kind of where we've been in the past.
Well, part of the whole idea is you got to fail to succeed, right? That's part of the whole entrepreneurial effort.
That's what companies and entrepreneurs do. They try an idea. If it works, great. If it doesn't, they pivot and move in another direction. But you don't give up. And that's part of that attitude of celebrating efforts, celebrating sometimes when it doesn't work on the first iteration or the first go-round, and then taking those ideas, pivoting with those. Corporations do it all day, every day around the world, and that's part of making an entrepreneurial ecosystem.
So you've just been listening to Mayor Barry, and so Robin Brulé, how does all this, what we've been talking about, fit into the planning that you're going to be doing, you think?
Well, I think it's really important that you address the skepticism because these are complex challenges. And these are not things that get solved overnight. And that's the beauty of living cities is that they recognize the fact that if you're really going to change an ecosystem, if you're really going to look at where you have assets and strengths and where you have gaps or barriers that you need to figure out how you're going to re-resource or reallocate to make things operate as effectively as possible to enhance that environment, that takes many years. And if you look at the original cities from round one, they are still involved in the integration initiative. So Living Cities, the great news about this partnership that we have is this is a multi-year, long-term effort because we're not going to see change in the first few weeks. It takes many years and it takes a lot of good thinking to really bring together leaders to help bring forward our best efforts and really figure out what we need to grow our economy.
So I've been in these San Francisco coffee shops where entrepreneurs talk to other entrepreneurs about starting businesses, and there's VC people sitting there, venture capital people sitting there. And I've been in the Hollywood coffee shops where everybody's got a script, everybody's trying to get financing. You know, I haven't heard that kind of stuff in Albuquerque. So how do you do that, Mayor?
That's what Innovate ABQ is exactly, Steve. That's why it's so important for us as a city that UNM and the STC at UNM and Lisa Kudla and her group and Bob Frank, that's why I worked hard as a mayor to get that downtown because we want to create a beehive. And what you just described is a beehive. Bruce Katz is a fellow at the Brookings Institute. He just wrote a book called Metropolitan Revolution. And Bruce and I had breakfast a month or two ago in Washington. And in his book, he talks about innovation districts. And that's the key component. And that's why proximity matters. That's why I fought so hard to get it downtown.
Yeah, cluster idea where you bring people together and the innovation happens.
You want collisions between people. And here's one of the great blessings we have in Albuquerque is not just that we have a lot of PhDs per capita in these high-tech entities like Sandia and AFRL and LANL. We have a $1 billion arts economy.
Yeah, that's the Air Force Lab you're talking about.
Yeah, Air Force Research Labs. Yeah. We have a $1 billion arts economy here.
Right.
And you start getting artists together with scientists and entrepreneurs together with researchers and poets together with the academics, and that's where you get that mix that you're talking about, and that's why we're concentrating this downtown. The rail yards is another component, but everything within about a mile. And then, of course, we can tie in Sandia through some public transportation to get back and forth and things. But this needs to be tight, and it needs to be – there needs to be a buzz there. In 21st century amenities, you know, you need to be able to grab a beer or a cup of coffee or have whiteboard space and to facilitate these human interactions that are so important.
So let's – I said to you before the show, the whole rapid transit bus line alone would merit a show. With you, but let's try to talk about it briefly, because it's a really exciting thing that we've heard a lot about rapid transit in Albuquerque for a long time down Central. Now it looks like it actually may happen.
We're really on the right track, if you will, to get that done. Bus rapid transit is what we're talking about, BRT for short. So when I talk about BRT, that means bus rapid transit.
Okay.
Very early in my administration, I started working on what I think is the next logical step for public transportation, and that's bus rapid transit. What is that? Think about a rail system. Think about a light rail or a train system where you have the train on the track. Well, for pennies on the dollar, because there's limited resources at the federal level, limited resources at the state and local level, not just in Albuquerque, but in El Paso and Las Vegas and
in Washington
and Eugene, Oregon, and everywhere else. BRT is dedicated lanes. So yes, it looks like a bus, but a lot of the buses are futuristic looking. But it's a rubber tired vehicle. It's a bus, but it runs in its own dedicated lane. So you have
– it would run down the center of Central.
Think
right?
about a subway with a view, because that's really what it looks like.
Uh-huh.
And it's a lot less expensive to construct. The footprint is very similar to rail, so that if down the road sometime in the future rail does make sense, you've already got the right-of-way in place. But most cities and the Federal Transit Administration, really headed up by Peter Rogoff, who I've met with a number of times in Washington – really have taken this, and the Obama administration is really pushing BRT because it makes sense, and you can get this transit-oriented development out of it because you're connecting people. And it's different because rather than just hopping on a rapid ride where you have to get into traffic, you have your own dedicated lanes, so you really do move much faster than traffic. You coordinate it with the streetlights. Emergency vehicles are the only other vehicles that can be in those lanes, so if there's an accident or a fire the police or the firefighters can get there quicker, but it's primarily for buses. And then it becomes an attractor because now you have a permanent transit facility in place, east to west. And then, of course, MR Cog, our local MPO here, is looking at doing a bus rapid transit from the airport to the Health Sciences Center at the university. So that tees into the bus rapid transit. But we're talking about eventually all the way from Tramway clear out to 118th Street. So you can get off I-40 at Tramway. You can come all the way through town and get on I-40 on the other end of town, get people off the freeway. You let our local folks use it for work, transportation. It'll run right by UNM, Presbyterian Hospital, some of the big employment centers. The Health Sciences Center gets you close. It connects Knob Hill to Atrisco to all these great neighborhoods, and it helps. It's a neat deal, and it makes sense, and it's something we can absolutely do here.
Well, let me just mention, if you just tuned in, this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and we're very pleased to be talking about the award of a Living Cities grant to Albuquerque, one of the five top cities in the United States, and what that planning and what that grant will eventually look like. And let me just bring you back into the conversation, Robin Brulé, because first of all, let me mention that the reason – what makes it rapid, among other things, is you don't have to step up into the bus and you'll already have your ticket, and there are these ticket locations. So you just get on the bus just like you would on a line, and you get in. But one of the really interesting things to me when I started looking at this is it does help revitalize downtowns because it – well, why don't you describe why that is and what you expect to see from it?
Well, as the mayor said, a big focus of this is the revitalization of downtown and creating that beehive and collective impact approach of those collisions that happen when folks get together and start talking about ideas. And that's part of this effort is looking at that, again, that whole ecosystem that's going to support our entrepreneurial ecosystem being successful, but also doing it in a specific place where there's multiple support systems and connectivity that can happen there, from types of education resources to mentorship to where folks can – there's going to be a WeWork space downtown, and the BRT plays a huge role in this in being able to provide resources and access for folks to be able to get there quickly.
Yeah, when you can get someplace quickly, when you don't have to pay for parking, where you don't need a car to do it, it makes a big difference. More people are going to utilize that system. I think in L.A. and in San Francisco, what you've seen is a densification of the downtown areas based on BART, based on the rapid transit bus lines in L.A.
Yeah, and we've already changed some of the zoning requirements up and down Central Avenue, Route 66, to allow for higher density housing. And then once we bring folks into the core of the city with bus rapid transit, we're also doing studies on walkability. Councilor Benton and others are District 2. Council District 2 is downtown. He's a real expert on walkability, so we'll get you off the bus and make it easy to get on your 2 feet or on a bicycle to and from places. And we tie this into our, you know, hundreds of miles of bike trails, of which we're adding additional ones here soon in the city of Albuquerque. And then you have this recipe for revitalization, not just in downtown, but on West Central that needs revitalization, East Central needs revitalization. And then you connect these some of the great neighborhoods in America, Nob Hill, like I said earlier, Natrisco, and the university neighborhoods. And you just bring people together through public transportation, and you create time, you create a system where you don't have to get ever, you don't have to get in a car.
So let me raise an issue that's sort of close to my heart. And I, you know, you can tell I'm a believer. I think that, you know, taking advantage of Albuquerque's resources, entrepreneurial and other resources makes sense. I think the rapid transit makes sense. But I guess I would suggest to you that another thing that makes sense to me, at least, is to look at the social indicators and to include that in the mix. And here's what I mean. I mean, we've got about a 50% employment rate in Albuquerque. We've got a very high youth unemployment rate. We've got a very low high school. None of the, you know, I'm not attributing this to you, but there's a high school dropout rate. There's a very low graduation. There's a very low college graduation rate. And to me, it all goes back to the beginning, because we have 70% of our kids born that are Medicaid qualified. I mean, these kids don't get read to. They don't hear positive words. They don't hear a lot of words compared to middle-class kids. And it seems to me that without a social component, without addressing that, you know, you may be doing something for this generation, but there's going to be another generation to follow. So unless, you know, we take into account, you know, the social characteristics of our state and our city, then, you know, you may move the needle, but you're not going to move it a lot unless you encourage this kind of development. And I did notice that in the greater Cincinnati area, they did include that program, you know, a kindergarten-ready program. And I just wonder what your reaction to this is.
Well, Steve, what you said is absolutely accurate from the standpoint of it. This is about population-level change and about system-level change. So with living cities, every city has a component that they use for living cities. But then you have to dovetail that in with the other ideas and the other programs that you have. We are having conversations, for example, about high school retention and graduation. You know, you pick, you just listed maybe 100 topics there.
Yeah, I know.
Well,
so
it's good. We have a program called Running Start for Careers that's not exactly part of Living Cities, but we're bringing industry taught curriculum into the high schools, because when I was in the state legislature, I would talk to kids about what it's like when you're in high school and maybe college isn't for you, and what does that opportunity look like? And what we saw was an opportunity gap. They want to learn a trade, maybe they want to start in, you know, go to work for a great company, but they want more skills the day they step out of high school. So how do we do that? Well, and how do we bring the public sector resources in with the private resources in with the public sector? So what we've done, we now have programs where we have industry teaching curriculum in the schools. We're doing it in film. We're doing it through Presbyterian and healthcare services. We're doing it in construction. We're doing it through the New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union for financial services. And we're adding more all of the time so that kids have a reason to stay in school. Their textbooks make more sense because now they know why geometry is important, because it applies to work. They can see someone like them maybe who succeeded, and so they have a built-in mentorship capabilities there or opportunities there. And all of a sudden you talk to all these kids and they say, wow, I went from not really knowing why I need to go to high school and not really seeing a lot of hope afterwards to, man, there's a path for me, and industry has seen me. I've seen industry, and that's one component. There's 1,000 others that we can do for term, making sure there's more books in homes so that a kid just has a book to hold. And we can do other, you know, pre-kindergarten programs. So it all ties together, and there's no one program that's going to do that.
But I know, like, for example, UNM Nurse Family Partnership has some very successful home visiting programs. So how do you, and they're reaching out to the extent they can. But so Robin Brulé, how do you integrate that into the Living Cities idea, or is that what you're going to be doing in the planning year?
For our Living Cities grant, we're focusing on job creation through innovation and entrepreneurship. And it doesn't mean that these things that you have brought up don't matter. They do. But really, for our effort, we're focusing on this because we feel like this is going to be the major lift that is going to help to float all boats and to be able to look at our population levels, the fact of undereducation and underemployment, part of our strategy in increasing those and making sure that we have enduring and lasting change is through this effort. And so we will look at things that people are doing to see how they fit and dovetail and create assets for this larger goal.
And this is where leadership comes in. This is where it's important because there are people doing great work in different areas. And if we can all bring our efforts together and break these silos down, this is what we did with our Heading Home Homelessness Initiative. You know, we found through that process we had three people doing one thing, nobody doing the other thing. So you bring people together, you take the limited resources for what sometimes seems like unlimited needs, and you maximize those. And so Living Cities can play a big part of that.
We're near the end of the show, and you know, bringing up metrics is a great thing to do because what I really want to end up with is a completely unfair question, which is, you know, how should we evaluate the success of this program, and when would we begin to see, you know, results from this? But let me start with you, Robin.
I think it's really important to note that this is grounded in data. So that is one of the overarching goals of the Living Cities approach, is that all our efforts are going to be grounded in data so that we can constantly evaluate and reevaluate, because data is going to tell the story. And so part of the planning year is really looking at, again, that asset mapping and figuring out where we have our gaps so that we can ground everything in real-time data and constantly be looking at it to evaluate what we need to measure to make sure we actually are moving the needle.
But how do I, Mr. Mayor, as an Albuquerque citizen looking at this program, when can I start to see something, do you think?
Well, we're already seeing it. We were visiting with the Kauffman Foundation this week about bringing entrepreneurial studies here. We're discussing with Microsoft bringing additional opportunities for our kids here. We will set up a metric through this planning process so that we have some milestones that we can gauge ourselves from. And we will end up with something like with Running Start. What is our metric there? Our metric is not only, and this hits right on what you talked about earlier, what can we increase the graduation rate for the students that are participating? Can we decrease the unemployment rate? We'll set goals, we'll measure them, we'll manage them, and then we'll report to the community. And it's just nice to have some outside resources coming in, because sometimes that allows you to be a little bit more innovative, if you will, take a few more chances, because people look at that as an opportunity to be a little bit more disruptive in a positive way to make system changes.
I'm afraid to say we're going to have to end the discussion there. I would like to thank my guests today, Albuquerque Mayor Richard Berry, Robin Brulé, the new head of Albuquerque's Living Cities proposal, and Gary Opedal, the Director of Economic Development for the City of Albuquerque. I would also like to thank my producer, Jefferson White. The executive producer of this show is Lynn Shebeki. My name is Stephen Spitz, and you've been listening to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas on KUNM. Podcasts of this show are downloadable at iTunes under Stephen Spitz. Archives of all my past shows are available at stephenspitz.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Seeger, more than any other musician, has kept America singing. Bill Clinton.
Some artists make musical history. Pete Seeger made history with his music.
I'm David Dunaway. Tune in for Pete Seeger, How Can I Keep From Singing?
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
This is KUNM News and Music that Connect from the University of New Mexico, 89.9, streaming live online at KUNM.org. It's 8:30.
Isn't life beautiful? Isn't life gay?